Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Now entered the House of Mystery. With your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, Mr. Michael Hawley, Mr. Grandpa Hawley.
That is correct. Hi, Al. I am the new grandpa.
Your granddaddy.
Yeah, I said I prefer the Mr. Howell approach, and I'm grandfather.
Well, I'll tell you. Boy, you'll be great grandfather soon, too. Won't be long.
I know, and I'm only 24.
Yeah. Yeah, you keep telling yourself that. You had that same disease that William Hopper had. Your hair turned gray real young.
Well, I started counting backwards at 40, so I thought that would be the best thing to do.
Yeah, you'll be younger than the grandkids soon.
That's right.
Yeah, well, today we have got an author that is from Australia, down under. So, and I know he's got a book that just came out April 30th called Dark Streets. It's an Australian crime thriller. And it's Sergeant Natalie Campbell, Thriller Book 1. So, Philip Strang, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Nice speaking with you.
Good to speak to you.
Philip, so you've got quite the history here. I didn't realize, but you've written a lot of books. Have you been like a, how do I say, have you been like an author your whole life type thing? Have you always known you'd be doing this?
Not at all. Not at all. I was basically sort of almost forced into it by my wife and daughter who said after many, many years of traveling to some weird and wonderful and some crazy places that I should sit down and write about my experiences. Well, my experiences are certainly not crime and the police. I have no knowledge of personal knowledge of either of those. So I initially wrote about places I'd been and characters I'd met and situations that had occurred. But then I got into crime thrillers. That's 8 years ago I started writing.
Was there something that gave you confidence to be able to do that? But, you know, because to come from something else and just to do writing and to decide to publish it and go for it, like what you've done in the last, looks like 8 years, is incredible. So was there something that gave you that kind of...
I think I always had the confidence that I could do it, primarily because I'd done many other things in my life and been, you know, and I had the confidence. I mean, certainly 8 years ago, I didn't have a clue about formatting or the font to use or whatever, but I knew that I could write a story, and I believe I can write entertaining stories. Not great literary works. I'd like to think they were great literary works, but they're entertaining and they draw people in. So I never had qualms about my ability to do it. No, I mean I don't think there's any more I can say. No, I never. If you're going to take on something, you just have to feel ultimate confidence that you can do it. Basically.
Right, right. Well, what makes a good book for you, Button? So when you're putting together a book or even reading a book, Is it the story, the characters? Like, what is it that keeps you interested?
I think it has to be the story and the characters and whatever keeps me turning the page. I mean, you start reading a book and you read a book by a well-known author and you read a chapter or two and say, oh, no, I don't go with this. And you put it to one side and another book will draw you on. And you just need to make sure that you can keep people turning those pages.
You started, though, with maybe your locations, right? Because you've traveled so much and you have so much to see. So you kind of started your book with where you've traveled, or did you decide, oh, that's going to just be my backdrop and then I'm just going to go for some of the characters, the people that you've seen?
Well, I mean, initially, because as we mentioned before, I suppose we can mention it here, for about 16-odd years, I was involved in building, I'll say it, for cellular phone networks around the world. People in Australia would say mobile phone networks. So I was involved with building the infrastructure, so which people may or may not know is very expansive. There's a lot of infrastructure in any cell phone network. And so I'd spent a year in Jamaica, for instance, which is one of the more idyllic locations, one would agree. And then in late 2002, October 2002, I found myself in Afghanistan with a private company, and we were building the first mobile cellular phone network in Afghanistan. So obviously, if you go to a place like that, you meet a lot of people, you see a lot of things. And because I was interested in the history, I mean, it's people wouldn't understand how stunningly beautiful the country is. And it's strange because people don't necessarily understand. But the Afghanis have a wonderful sense of humor. I mean, for us who were there, we never had any trouble. That was October 2002. I wouldn't say it necessarily say it the same today, but in October 2002, it was very good. I mean, it was rugged. And then after that, I had 3 years in Pakistan, but I had my wife with me in Pakistan, and we had a great time. Hard to imagine that I can say that, because a lot of people would assume you can't go there. It's too difficult to go there. It's too dangerous to go there. No, you sort of somehow acquire a sense of where you are and what you're doing, and you handle the situation. And then a lot of time spent in Africa, a lot of Africa, many, many countries in Africa. So you meet a lot of people, and they tend to get weaved into the stories. Although after the first two or three books, I felt I'd exhausted those countries. Then I started on crime thrillers, primarily based in England. And this is the first one I've written in Australia.
So you're so, it's kind of like Africa. You're like Alan Quatermain in all these stories.
Yes, I saw a lot of Africa, a lot of Africa. I was in Liberia in 2004, just after Charles Taylor was kicked out of the place. It was a bit rugged there, but yet again, immensely interesting. Not interesting to everyone, but I mean, I think I'd classify as an adventurer who handled those situations and could deal with those situations.
So now your new book here, The Dark Streets, and you say it's Australian crime, and your main character in it would be Sergeant Natalie Campbell. How did you come up with that character? Is there someone you drew that off of, or is that just something all imagination for you?
I think probably imagination on that. I mean, when I start a book, I decided after I'd written, I think I wrote two series, I've written two series so far based in England, one in London, and the other series is based in Salisbury, which is a market town to the west of London. Most people know it because it's close to Stonehenge. I think the lead character in the Salisbury novels in part is based on me. The London series, he's a black Jamaican who was born in England and grown up in England, who's a detective, chief inspector. I mean, strangely, he's based on someone I knew who I met in Senegal, and he was a Senegalese, but he'd been American educated. He doesn't know the character's based on him. But in the Sydney book, I don't think I've based those on anyone, really. I think I just wrote and the characters evolved.
Well, how do you experience your character then? Like when you say you just develop them. So like in Natalie Campbell, for instance, the sergeant, do you hear that, the voice of Natalie? Do you see her? Like how does that happen? How does this whole situation go on?
Oh, yes. Once I'm involved in the book, I start to see the people and I start to hear the people. Yes, very much so.
And then that must make it difficult in the sense of because you start to see them and create this character and hear them and all that. How do you decide how they're going to behave, but as the story progresses, or do they sort of take over?
I think they take over. They take over. I mean, once I find it hard to do it these days. It was easier in the early days, but eventually, if you're writing, you start to get in the zone, and then you become part of that world. I mean, the real world around you tends to move into the background, and you become part of the story, and the story evolves. I certainly had no idea that the sergeant would take a preeminent position over the inspector, a male inspector. I didn't know that. But as I started writing, it tended to move in that direction. It tended, although Sydney was a little different, writing in Sydney, because I live in Sydney. I mean, I know Sydney better than I know London. So I knew the areas, and I think certain people wove themselves into it. But I can't think particularly which people.
So your antagonists, do you have different kind of killers, or is there a particular type of killer that you like? And serial killers, or how? Or all the above?
Invariably, in all of my books, there will be more than one murder. There will invariably be one murderer who committed several murders, or there may be two murderers. But I don't set off with any preconceived direction or plan as to how the book will evolve. I basically sit down and I start the book, sometimes with a vague idea of the first chapter, sometimes with no idea. And I basically just start writing away, and then it starts to lead in a particular direction.
That's interesting, because when Al, you know, he'll ask questions like, some authors, they have everything down pat, everything written down, organized, and barely switch and change. It looks like you kind of flow with it.
Yes, I mean, there's two ways you can do it. Those who plot extensively, and that's fine, and there's others. There's that terrible word they say for people who just wing it as they start writing, of pantsers, which is a terrible word, really. But anyway, I think I'm certainly the latter. I just start. But once I start to get into it and I start to form characters, I'll just put bullet points at the end of where my writing is, names, unresolved issues, and so on. And I'll write from front to back. I will not chop and change around. And I find that at the end, apart from the editing and the grammar to fix up, there's rarely any continuity issues.
And that's through, like, if you have a trilogy or if you have the same protagonist throughout, you remember situations and also history within that world, so you don't kind of mess it up.
No, I tend not to remember it in as much detail as I should, and I tend not to note. I notice that when I write a second book in a particular series, and I only notice this in editing, that certain character names start to pop up in the next book, and certain phrases and certain situations, which I don't want. So, I do extensive editing. But I think what's important is to get words on the page. If you get enough words down, then the editing process will resolve any of those issues.
And so when you're writing bad characters, the villain, the killer, in the book, is it the same sort of experience as when you're writing the good characters, or the people that are, you know, the good people, so to speak, in the book? Do you have the same sort of interaction with your bad characters?
I'm not sure. I don't think too deeply about it when I'm writing. I'm writing, and they evolve. They tend to be, the good people tend to be different in character as much as the bad people. I'm not sure that's a totally satisfactory answer. I'm trying to think of a better answer to that.
Well, do you have any sort of, negative feelings toward writing a bad character? Do you have any problems writing a bad character?
Not at all. Not at all. No, I have no issues. I mean, when I'm writing, I don't, if there's a murder, I don't get into the, the gory detail, the blood oozing or any of that. I mean, I sort of say there's a murder and what happened, but I don't get involved into too much elaborate detail. And I certainly don't use any bad language in the book. I might infer bad language, but I certainly don't use bad language in the book. I suppose that's a personal preference, because personally for myself, I don't use bad language or slang or whatever. But no, I have no issues writing about the bad people. I mean, I traveled a lot. I met a lot of good people. I met more than my fair share of rogues and villains as well. So, rogues and villains always make a point of telling you how honest and decent and honourable they are. Well, I'm afraid if you've travelled enough into these parts of the world, you know who's good and who's bad. I've met a few, so I have no trouble writing about them.
What do you think about the violence you write? Like you say, so you don't get into the gore, so it's not necessarily there's not a real violent streak to the book or anything. It just sort of, you sort of know things are happening, but you don't get into it. Is that kind of what you mean?
Well, I mean, if someone's strung up and gets some bad treatment, I'll mention it, but I won't elaborate. Some authors I've read, some well-known authors, get into it so deep that I don't need to read it, basically. I read to be, if people are picking up one of my books, they're picking it up to read an entertaining thriller. They want to be entertained. They don't want, they don't necessarily want all the gore thrown in.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just an entertainment thriller. Do you ever have sort of a meaning or some subtext that you hope readers will take away from a book?
I don't think so. I don't see any philosophical side to what I'm writing. I mean, I've certainly read a great deal over the years, and I've read most of the ancient Greek classics, and I've read a lot of the Russian and War and Peace and those sort of books. They have some meaning to them, but I'd like to write the sort of books that you're inferring with some sort of deeper message. My writing hasn't evolved to that stage at this point in time.
Yeah, well, I just notice sometimes when you're writing, sometimes a subtext will come out of it organically without an intention. Like you never put an intention to, you know, this is right and this is wrong or anything like that. But sometimes it just comes out with the story, you know, at how it resolves. That's kind of what I was meaning, probably more than you sitting down going, oh, you know, I have this point to make.
No, I sit down with a lead characters. Now I intend to write some more in following on with Sergeant Natalie Campbell and her inspector. Moving forward, they will evolve. Their lifestyles will evolve. I'll talk about their personal side of it, but there will be a different set of other characters who will come into it. In fact, I'm halfway through another book set in Sydney, which I hope to finish in another month or so. Yeah, if some meaning comes out of it, I don't think there's any necessary meaning at the end of it. Crime doesn't pay or anything like that. And I'm certainly not necessarily trying to portray the criminals as invariably awful and wrong and so on. I'm not sure that I'm doing that.
So now in this new series, in the new book, what do you think the biggest difference, like why change the setting to Sydney? I mean, you live there, but you've also done previous settings in the UK there. So was there a particular reason you went to Sydney?
I felt that there was a need to write another series. I mean, nobody knows me in Sydney because my books are primarily sold in America and UK, more UK than America. But I think that's more a case of how much money I put into promotion, really. I mean, America's a much bigger market than the UK, so you proportionally have to put more money into to make some impact in America. So I thought I was actually interested to see what reaction I might have in Australia by writing about Australia, and would it impact on my overseas sales as well? Now, I believe it's not impacted on my sales overseas, and Australia is, I mean, the old adage when anyone ever talks about advertising books in Australia, they always say, well, you might as well just advertise in Florida. because it's the same population. I mean, we've only got 24 million people here. It's a relatively small market. Now, I thought they'd be interested to see how my books would go if I wrote a book about Australia. And it's a different environment of Sydney compared to London or Salisbury, which I mentioned before. I mean, if you've been to Sydney, I don't know if you've been to Sydney, but I mean, it's open by the harbour and it's sunny and so on. It's got a different feel, the city, to being in London. I know that.
Right, right. Yeah, that's rainy and dark and dirty.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a place in London and we always think, oh, maybe we should just go and live in London for a while. But every time we think about it, we think about the rain. No, here it's, well, we get rain here, but I mean, the temperature's mild. Even now it's fairly cold. I mean, you can go swimming every day of the year in Sydney if you want.
Now you're going into winter time while we're going into the summer, right?
Yes. I did check because it got down to 5 degrees centigrade last night, which is about 42 Fahrenheit. And during the day, it'll be up around 65. It might get colder than that, but it won't get a lot colder than that.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, quite a bit nicer.
I mean, if I talk about being cold in Sydney, I mean, that's relative to some parts of America and Canada.
No,
I'm in Buffalo where we get 4.5 feet of snow.
I haven't seen snow for a long, long time.
Just look at my Facebook page. You'll see a lot of it.
Well, there's a lot of snow in Australia, surprisingly.
Oh, that's good.
Snowy mountains.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a pretty big country, you know.
Oh, yes.
Well, it's really interesting. Do you know how many books? So you're just like going by, as they say, the seat of your pants. So you don't really have an idea of how many books you're going to write. For instance, in this new series, like when you've got Natalie Campbell, it's just in your mind, you have kind of a plan of writing 5 or 6 books, or is it just completely as it goes?
Well, my initial thought was that I should get 3 out fairly quickly because that if people buy the first one, they're likely to buy the second and the third. So at the present moment, I've only got 1, whereas in my English series, I think one series has got 10 and the other's got 17. So I think there's no limit to how many books I can write in a particular series. It depends how the characters evolve. I believe my Salisbury series with Inspector Tremaine there, for instance, even in book one, he was suffering with ill health and he was getting on in years. He was in his late 50s. He was drinking too much and smoking too much. And I think I got to 10 in the series and I felt I can't keep writing about him. I think he's basically reached the end of the road. So I can't see how I can write any more in that series. But initially, I need to get 3 out in Sydney because people will read the second and third book. If you're on Amazon, you'll get read through and so on. I need to do that. That's my initial thought.
How long is it taking you to write one of them now?
Longer than it used to. Longer than it used to. My problem is not writer's block. I think you do get mental exhaustion if you write a lot. And when I started writing all those years ago in 2005, the words just poured out of me. I was sitting there, I was writing 10, 12,000 words a day. It just poured out of me. But for me now to sit down and write 2,000 to 3,000 words, it doesn't come as easy as it came before. I can do it. So I'm trying to write 2,000 words a day. So if you work on that, probably 6 weeks should get the basic writing down.
Wow. So what's your process then? Do you sit down Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 type thing and write? You can just sort of plan your writing time? Or do you have to be in a certain mindset or mood? What's your process like?
The trouble is, if you wait for the mindset and the mood and the ideal circumstances, it's easy for it not to come. I try to sit down every day, but I find that there are distractions. There's always distractions, and somehow you have to get around those distractions. But if you're going to try and write 2,000 words, you have to write 2,000 words a day, and you have to sit down there and you have to work through it. If you wait for that ultimate day when everything comes into play, and this is it, I'm going to write, you've missed so much time. And I found that sitting down and writing 2,000 words, eventually as you write, you'll get into the writing. And obviously during the editing process, you'll resolve any issues anyway.
So during the COVID seasons, how did that help you out? Or
I found that distracting. I didn't find that helped at all. I found that was a strange situation. I mean, I certainly had no issue having to stay at home. That doesn't matter. I mean, you can't see it from where you are, but I'm looking out. I got a beautiful view of the Harbour Bridge and the Opera House outside my window. So,
oh, sweet.
So we're great for the Christmas fireworks with you, the New Year's fireworks. See them from our balcony. But I found COVID a little distracting. I mean, initially with what was happening with COVID, distracted. I believe I lost momentum during COVID.
Yeah, so I think, talking to writers, some have said that. Some totally shut down or did not very well in the COVID and all that sort of things. And then others, some of them did extra well. They just really did a good writing process through the whole thing. So you just never know, you know, how things are going to affect you. Yeah, do you just spend a lot of time researching any of this stuff?
No.
No.
No, I did when I was first writing books on Afghanistan and those sort of places, a lot of research. Initially, when I started writing crime thrillers, I did, because I decided I was going to write crime thrillers, I made sure to read all the main writers of crime thrillers, to read some of their books just to get a flavor for it. And then if you want to know about the investigative process, if you want to know about the law, if you want to know, you just get on Google and just Google whatever you need to know. I mean, if you want to see true crime scene investigations in progress, if you want to watch an autopsy, which is pretty gruesome and grim, go on the line. You'll find it. Everything is online. If you want to know the legal process, go online. You can find whatever you want to do online. And of course, if you're writing about a particular London or Salisbury or Sydney, and you want to say that, if you want to get a person from one point to another, you go on Google Street View and you can walk it out as if you were there.
I've done that as well.
Yeah.
Now, but one advantage you have is you have such a wealth of experience.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think that, those experiences of my travels, they certainly open the mind. They broaden the mind.
So have you ever had, let's say you understood how Afghans lived and thought, have you ever brought a character like that into, let's say, Sydney, and then how that would have been an experience and written like that, where you kind of mix culture in a way?
I think that I'm trying to weave it in more so. I find that I tend to end up with Anglo-Saxon characters. But, I mean, Sydney's very cosmopolitan, the same as London is cosmopolitan. And so I try to bring those people in. I don't want to get too uptight about ethnic differences and so on. I mean, people are people, good and bad. I mean, these factors don't come into it as far as I'm concerned. I mean, my lead chief inspector in London, he's from Jamaica. So, but yes, I believe they should be brought into it more so.
Have you had another experience I had is my editor is more up to date on kind of cultural things. And so while I'm trying to write the word prostitute, she kind of switches it into sex worker. So it's like she's keeping an eye on me, making sure that I'm up to date. And do you have editors do the same?
Well, I have a proofreader in London, but no, she doesn't do that. And I mean, those issues you talk about in the editing process and changing the words and so on, we don't have that in Australia, quite frankly. I mean, we don't have any of those. The excesses that we currently see around the world have not impacted on Sydney. We have none of that. We have none of that tension over here. I mean, I suppose it's here to some extent, but you're not really aware of it here. So I've not. So if I'm right in, yes, my proofreader in England will correct me on certain words that maybe I shouldn't use, but not very strongly. She certainly picks up on some words that I use, which are Australian and wouldn't be in context in England.
Oh yeah, right.
What do you give for advice for someone? Let's say someone just wants to be a writer like you. What would you tell them to do?
I think it's basically, if you want to write, just write. I mean, write and put words down on the page, get ideas down, move it forward. I suggest reading books in the genre that you're interested in writing about. Just pick the good ones. Just pick a few of the better name writers and just read them and then sit down and write. If you want to write, don't worry too much about the formatting. Concern yourself to write with the best grammar that you can. Make sure your spelling's correct. But the editing process should pick most of that up. I mean, it's strange, after so many books, I feel I could almost proofread a book myself now. I've picked up so much over the years.
Do you like the publishing world the way it is? I guess with Amazon and stuff, do you self-publish all of your books or some of them, or do you go through publishers? What's your process?
Well, initially, I did look to go through a publisher, but I mean, these were the early days of writing, and I suspect my writing wasn't up to the standard required anyway. And I got a nice, I got a few nice letters back. Thank you very much. But no.
Right.
Now I've just been self-publishing. I've been exclusive with Amazon up until recent time. I'm considering on going wide, although Amazon is still 90% of the market.
Yeah.
I have sold the audio rights to 20 of my books to an American company, a reputable American company, which is progressively making them into audio books. But it's strange because they're doing a great job. They paid me for them, of course, so it was all nicely negotiated. But it's strange. I tried to listen to the one based in Salisbury with Inspector Tremaine. I found it difficult because I know how Inspector Tremaine sounds.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy on the narration didn't sound like Inspector Tremaine. He sounded good, but he's not the Inspector Tremaine in my head.
Yeah, that's kind of an issue with it, right, with audio.
But, I mean, I'm glad they're making the audio books because I could have done it myself and organized someone to do it, but it's a very exhausting program in terms of time, I can imagine, to do that.
I did it once, and it took all summer. It's kind of even like writing. It's a very, very rewarding. And then my publisher actually took it from me. No, but, I mean, in a good way. But, it's a time-consuming thing.
Yeah, I really don't want to do that. I mean, in an ideal situation, the problem I have is because I have a technical background, I can do book covers. I can do formatting. I can do Photoshop. I can do the marketing. I really don't want to do any of those. I'd rather just write. And I've tried to find people to do all of those. And, I mean, my criteria, if I went to – I've tried this. I've gone to people who said they're Facebook experts or they're this or that. I said, okay, show me where your input will get a result over and above what I'm doing and over and above what you're going to cost me. And invariably they just come back with the cliched words, but no genuine proof.
That's an interesting. Yeah. So now, do you have a website and do you have social media that you like to interact with readers on, or how do people find Philip?
Well, I have a website, philipstrang.com. And I also have Facebook. Now, I sort of interact a little bit on Facebook, but not as much as I should. Or just trying to find it now. Philip Strang Writer, it's called, on Facebook.
Great. Now, we'll put both those up on our website. So what's up next? You got book two of this coming out, or you're finishing it. What else you got planned this year?
Well, I've got to about 40,000 words on the second book in Sydney, I found this a couple of times on books that I get halfway through the book and basically all the characters are in place. The murders have been committed and basically the second half of the book is just taking what you've got and then just slowly working through the characters and the evidence, trying to work to a conclusion. And I found I was sort of got stuck a little bit on that. So I started on another book based in London with DCI Cook. And yet again, I just started writing, not quite sure where that one was headed. After about two paragraphs or so, I basically just seemed to go down like a rabbit's hole there. And basically I had a murder. It had a twist to it. And I've written about 10,000 words on that. So I will get back into the Sydney one in about a week or two, I imagine. Finish that off, go through the editing process. And I do a lot of self-editing myself, a lot. I probably go through the book countless times before I'm satisfied. I'll send it to the proofreader. It'll come back. Then I'll send it off to an advanced reader group. Some will come back and say, well, great. And others will give me a lot of detail. Remarkable amount of detail, which I'm pleased of for. And then I'll just carry on and finish the other one in London and probably get around to doing the third one after that. I try to release a book every 3 months. I don't always make it, but I try to release every 3 months because if you're on Amazon, for instance, Amazon has this cliff that if you publish a book, for the first month, it's regarded as a new release and it gets a leg up. The second month is sort of dropping off and the third month, it's on its own. And you just need to keep feeding new books up to it. The most sales I ever had was when I first started crime thrillers and I started to get into it and I was able to write like crazy. I wish I could do it now, but I can't. I wrote a book a month for 10 months. It's staggering. I can't even think how I did it now. It's impossible to think about it because I just basically switched off from the world and I did it. And then if you keep feeding a book up every month, you can move a lot of numbers on Amazon because you're feeding fresh product. So the easiest way to sell lots of books is to write a book a month. But of course, easy is, well, it's not really easy, is it?
Well, fantastic. Okay, so now we'll have your information up. And, of course, the new book is called Dark Streets, and it's an Australian crime thriller. And our guest is the author of that book and many more. Look him up. It's Philip Strang. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks very much.
Nice speaking with you.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.